Coco the gorilla died this week. I am sad. Though she lived to a ripe old age for a gorilla. I used to watch videos of Coco regularly. Here was a gorilla who'd been using sign language with a vocabulary of over 1,000 words. With an IQ somewhere in the 80 to 100 range, she wasn't that far off from that of the average person. Coco's capacity for empathy was great. When she worried that she hurt someone's feelings by making a joke, she covered her face in mortification. When she learned that her beloved kitten had died, she cried. Her most frequent signs were polite and love. Coco was indeed her own being. But humanity helped her along her evolutionary step on the ladder, giving her our language, introducing her to art and literature and film. She painted, spent her days watching movies, turning away from the sad parts, having conversations with her friends. She was also known for being gentle and kind. The best of what we can be. We raised up a gorilla in our own image and did a better job than we do with our people. Coco was a reflection of ourselves at our best. We knew how to give this gorilla the best of humanity. Yet we are not so kind to ourselves, to our children. I'm glad Coco never knew about immigrant detention camps. The events this week have stirred me on multiple levels. Mostly, I am sad for the children we have heard about. I'm also aware that there are so many children who face trauma and horrific experiences in our own country and all over the world, children we never hear about. But I do believe when something catches our attention, invites us to take notice, we should. So in our moment of silence, let us take notice of our own pain, of that of others. Of places of sorrow and hope, for yes, even those are there, sometimes in the most unlikely places. Maybe even the eyes of a gorilla who taught us about the best of what we can be. We are here at the end of this church year, and I look back. I look back on the people we have lost from this congregation, from death. I think of the 5 marriages I have had the honor of officiating this year. I think of the challenging times, the illnesses that some of you have gone through, are going through, the organizational challenges we've had, the occasional conflict or tension. I think of the simple joys, the interactions I have with you that help me carry on this work. Often it's only later that I realize that a particular moment has renewed my spirit that day. For those moments, I thank you. Coco and those moments of renewal remind me of what is possible. And we are all called, to consider what is possible as we envision a future. We are all called to imagine. A quotation from the Southern Poverty Law Center. The term neo-Confederate refers to a specific subset of American white nationalism predominant in the southeastern U.S., which fuses the typically strong nativist immigration policies, Christian dominionism, and other supposedly fundamental values of the heritage crowd with a belief in the inherent superiority of whites of European descent. Neo-Confederacy also incorporates advocacy of traditional gender roles, is hostile toward democracy, strongly opposes homosexuality, and exhibits an understanding of race that favors segregation and suggests white supremacy. Neo-Confederacy no longer just refers to a kind of thinking in the Southeast United States. Is this now all the United States? Could be, if we don't do something about it. Another quotation, one in which I hope it is more agreeable to your ears. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Words worn so proudly by the Statue of Liberty. And this week we recognize that these words are in danger of perhaps being an echo from a forgotten past, an antiquated wisp of poetry lost on the winds of time. For once upon a time, those who spoke of the greatness of America invoked those words, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, in the same breath that they spoke of our greatness. And now, many judge the greatness of America by how harsh we can be, how we can live out those neo-Confederate values along the border, whether it be separating families, putting 1,500 children in a converted Walmart, all the while complaining that the rule of law allows no other choice. In 1997, the Flores Settlement was created, limiting the government's ability to keep children in detention and ordering them to be placed in least restrictive settings as possible. As a solution to the child immigrant crisis we saw this week, the current administration is now going to try to overturn the Flores ruling so they can keep entire immigrant families, yes, together, but in detention camps without end dates. Striking down the Flores ruling became a goal of immigration hardliners, particularly after a 2016 ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals limiting the government's ability to keep children in detention for more than 20 days. Are the powers that be getting what they wanted all along? I don't have the answer to all these questions, but I do know we have to keep paying attention. We can't be distracted too long by our First Lady's fashion choices, as puzzling as they may be. For this glimpse of a neo-Confederate authoritarian America is not the America I belong to, am a part of. I want to recognize my own country again. For the past couple of years, I've learned that true evil is opportunistic. It waits for its moment. True evil may find its way in when a narcissistic man-child president, who himself may be more broken and self-serving than strategically evil, leaves the door open for those who truly are evil geniuses. Evil finds its way into the hearts and minds and actions of once good or at least decent people through the open door of their fears. fears that they will be left behind amidst racially changing demographics, fears that what they have will be taken away. Evil looks for entry points of fear, and once in the sphere of human heart, spreads outward as insidious as any malignant disease, finding its way into dysfunctional social systems and places of oppression. I'm here to say this morning that the circle of useful anger, the circle of love that we draw as Unitarian Universalists must be great to eclipse this evil. And we do not enlarge the circle by staying at its center. Its borders are at the margins, and at the margins we will find those who have not been granted access to the center. We will find the very people we've seen in the news this week, people who are existing behind chain-link fence, languishing in camps, people who answered that call of Lady Liberty, who felt their best option was setting out with only a few possessions on foot or packed into the back of trucks for the chance of a different life. How desperate someone must be to do that. Those who cannot look with compassion on those who would make this harrowing decision are welcoming evil into their hearts. I'm not advocating open borders this morning or saying that immigration that circumvents law and order is acceptable. I'm talking about compassion for the human condition, how we treat desperate people who come to us for help. It's not by taking their children from them. Just think, in little over a month, this zero-tolerance policy took over 2,000 children away from their families. By most accounts, record-keeping has been questionable, meaning reuniting these families could be very challenging. And from what I've heard, there currently isn't a truly viable plan to do so. Do you know what dictionary.com's word of the year was for this past year? Does anybody know? So close. She said collusion. Complicity. Complicity is the word of the year. We are in a time when there is an unwillingness by so many to see the deeper truths unfolding in society. Dictionary.com says our choice for word of the year is as much about what is visible as it is about what is not. It's a word that reminds us that even inaction is a type of action. The silent acceptance of wrongdoing is how we've gotten to this point. As I look to take my vacation and study leave, I also take this moment to publicly renew my commitment to Unitarian Universalism and this work. Like all people, I have the occasional dark night of the soul, where I wonder, is it all worth it? But we are in a time when the call to people of conscience is greater than ever. When we can harness that useful anger that our worship associates spoke about this morning, and what better way to answer that call than by rooting ourselves in compassion, a theology of interdependence and equality. Our UU theology says that no one is outside the circle of love. And yet we know there remain walls of oppression in society and in our own hearts, walls that must be broken down with both love and useful anger. One of the ways we break down these walls is by having a vision for our future, having intentionality about what we do. Last week, Reverend Tara Klein invited you to articulate three wishes you had for this congregation. I pulled this information together, and guess what? You're a group of people with strong opinions across the spectrum. Who knew, right? But there are some common themes there. And I've determined your vision for UUCF can be measured in four broad categories. So let's start with the smallest category and move to the largest. The first category, about 15% of your responses, programming concerns. More religious, adult religious education opportunities. as well as the expansion of our children's religious education program, particularly our teens. Some of you would like more subgroups here, such as various religious identity groups, pagan groups, Jewish groups. More activities would be welcome, including sports offerings, such as baseball, making opportunities to visit our local Camp de Benneville more accessible. That was brought up. And several people mentioned investing in our music program, including multiple approaches to the style of music. I'm going to tell you right now, we're always going to have an eclectic music program. That's the only way we can even begin to make everybody happy, right? Eclectic. About 20% of the wishes were ones related to the relationships here within our community. There were a few wishes highlighting the importance of intergenerational relationships and cultivating membership of people of all ages, from young adults, young families, to opportunities for old and young to meaningfully interact. There was a yearning for even more opportunities for social interaction, and a sense that there is a need to reach out intentionally to those who are shy. A couple of people felt that volunteer opportunities need to be more publicized, more known. There needs to be more sensitivity to food choices for vegans and others. And a couple of others felt the need to deepen our congregation's comfortability with theological diversity, specifically that considered theistic belief be honored as much as intellectual search and skepticism. About 30% of the responses, third category here, were focused on relationships outside UUCF. The continued need for social action engagement, partnering with other churches, congregational visibility, more outreach, more events that attract people outside the UU community, and more opportunity for interfaith work. And finally, the largest category, with about 40% of the responses, was related to facility and growth concerns. 8 wishes for a great facility, a new home for UUCF, and 3 people absolutely want to stay in this building. Somebody's going to be happy somewhere along the way, right? Unhappy. 5 people feel we should own our own building. A few wishes, some of you have big visions, UUCF achieved mega church status. Specifically, they said 1,000 plus members, 100 people in the choir. Eleanor, you have your work cut out for you, right? A ministry team composed of multiple ministers, and 6 people felt that a general emphasis on congregational growth, whatever that means, was important. And at the same time, several people talked about the importance of retaining long-term members. And even a few of you expressly wanted to keep me as a minister. So thank you. Nobody said they didn't, so maybe we're being polite. But there were 5 wishes in this category that UUCF be sustainable, both financially and in our structuring and social relevance. We have wishes that we retain our warmth, uniqueness, and hospitality. At least 10 wishes for more diversity in our attendees, racial, economic, and even developmental differences was mentioned. And with all of this in mind, a few of you wish for a smooth transition to the next level, grounded in dynamic service to the community and a mission, a real mission that was forward-thinking. And then finally, 2 of you wish for a new United States president. I'm working on it. A lot of ideas. Some of them even conflicting or at least in tension with one another. But my assessment is that they are concentrated into appropriate areas of importance for progressive faith communities like ours, people of conscience. They represent the programming that enriches our community, that helps us to be our best selves. They represent caring for one another, both inside our walls and out. And when it comes to growth and facility concerns, the ideas most evident were about being more engaged, more visible, more diverse, common themes. And this congregation will now have to decide where and how we can be all or most of the things that we say we want to be. How do we better engage outside our walls? How do we better grow within our walls? How do we increase our programming? How do we live out a mission that is inclusive of more people? And that's your work, this congregation's work, over the next few months, certainly. Because answer these questions we must. Because whatever we do or don't do is our response to what we feel we are called to do. And just as the word complicit suggests, even doing nothing is doing something. So what we do should be done with deep reflection and intentionality. Whatever we do, wherever we go or don't go, we are called at this moment in time. There is no doubt. We are called. I'll tell you, one of the things I'll have to work on this summer is exploring how much faith I still have in humanity. Not that I don't believe that there will always be some people who will choose to do good under most circumstances, but perhaps the foundation of goodness, that ability to empathize, is a rarer skill than I realized. Perhaps we have evolved so far from living in the communal setting of villages directly dependent on one another that we have lost something. Our cultural evolution has moved to the point where many people have more of a relationship with their cell phone than they do with another human being. I worry this morning for those children who remain separated. The trauma will linger and will manifest itself in some ways as they get older that will not be socially healthy. And in a vicious cycle that will continue if we don't stop it, that trauma-induced behavior will be used to affirm the negative things that some people say about these children with brown skin. Today's service is titled, All Are Called, because I do believe we all are called, not just liberal people or Unitarian Universalists, but all of us as human beings. I don't know cosmically why we are here, or even if there is a reason, but I figure life is richer if I choose to think there is, right? The most obvious reason I can come up with, the one that makes sense, is that we are here to figure it out. And figuring it out means that somehow, someday, we will end up loving each other. Love across differences. Love that handles each other's vulnerabilities with such tenderness. Love that heals the broken souls of those who march at white supremacist marches and callously dismiss the internment of children. Love that teaches us to exist in harmony. I don't think I'm a better person than most, and I'm the first to say that when I talk about evil, I believe I have the capacity for it to grow within me. Perhaps if the circumstances in my life had been different or were different, I would have had very different feelings this week, very different assessment of what had happened. So I don't believe that what we see in the world is beyond hope, because I do believe we share a common humanity that can be used for good or evil. But the call I hear this morning is grounded in the knowledge that the human heart is perhaps more corruptible than I realized. And I can think of no better thing to do than to answer that call. We each might answer it in different ways, and as a community, we will need to move forward figuring out a way to answer it together. But answer it we must. It is our best option, folks. Imagine a phone ringing forever. At some point, you get up and answer the damn thing. At some point, humanity will have to figure it out or destroy itself in trying. I don't want to lose my love for humanity itself. I don't want you to either. And I think we do that. We don't lose that love by answering that call. We answer it with love, courageous love, love bestowed with conviction and strength. In so doing, we might even be saving someone. We might even be saving ourselves.